Welcome to The Business Show. We believe that our journey through this world is one we must take together, expanding, learning, and growing as a united force. We know that history is being made right now, and the decisions we make today will shape our tomorrow. These decisions will not only impact us, but will define the future for generations to come. If we don't make the right choices now, we risk creating a future we don't want. That's why we're here, to slay the dragons of the modern world and to face the challenges it brings head on. The future demands that we come together to tackle these challenges, and the only way forward is through unity and collaboration. Let's rise together, undivided but united. Today, we are diving into the heart of creativity and sustainable marketing to understand the state of marketing. We couldn't have asked for a better guest to unpack this with us than Kenzani, known as Kenzie Nobanda, from Nedbank. She's an executive marketing and corporate affairs specialist with over 20 years of experience and accolades in marketing leadership and innovation. Kenzie is a leader who pushes boundaries, challenges the status quo, and brings purpose to creativity. Kenzie, a warm welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I'm so excited. Like, we had to wait for ages to get you here. You have a packed diary, right? Go, Kenzie. I need you. Hot girl. Okay.
This is going to be really special, I think. I'm excited. Yeah.
Very, very cool. So I'm going to jump in straight, right? Creativity often makes us think about the world differently. It challenges the way that we think about things, but it also brings us almost to the same page. But it's also a way to unite us in so many different ways. There is so much work being done out there in order to try, and I know that you're very passionate about this, trying to push the boundaries on creativity and creative excellence. Apart from the work that you've done in your career, what is the latest piece of creative work where you go, wow, that was just brilliant. That has just completely pushed me into a direction. I've never thought about it this way.
Yeah, to be honest, it's actually work from the Middle East. I saw it while I was judging the Louis. I was jury president for one of the categories. So in Muslim culture, it's not that adoption is not allowed. It's just that I think as a woman, to not have kids biologically is almost like frowned upon and stuff. And I think it's in a lot of cultures, to be honest. Like, it happens also in some black culture. And what this brand did is they basically created a piece of communication that started to remove the stigma around adoption. The film itself is so beautiful. Oh, and wow. As you go through the film, you actually think this woman is like going to give birth and stuff, right? And actually you realize that she's adopting. And it sparked a conversation in the Middle East around, but like, this is not haram because it's not against, the Islamic religion. But for some reason, it's just frowned upon. And for me, what was particularly stirring about the piece of communication, because I think creativity should move us, but it should also give us results, was how the adoption rates ended up skyrocketing in the Middle East and stuff. And for me, that's what creativity is about, because if you just said, guys, actually, like, if you just like said to people, you know, adoption's not haram, we can do it, there's no problem, I don't think it would have made the same impact and stuff. But to use creativity to tell that story. Mm. And in the end, I mean, the brand is a brand that drives adoption in the Middle East. And initially, the reaction was incredibly negative. And that's the other thing about creativity, is you never know how it's going to land the other way. Mm. But if you believe in the story that you're telling and why you're telling that story, it doesn't matter what the response is initially. But what started happening is other people took the story itself. So the brand actually ended up not being part of that story. Other people were now telling the story and saying,
beautiful.
Actually, you know, I was adopted, and a celebrity started telling that story organically. And for me, it moved me so much because it's creativity that I think beautiful film. I love the craft of the film. But more than that, changed about 7,000 young, like, children's lives who were actually adopted because of that piece of work. So yeah, for me, that's like a strong piece of work that really moved me.
I love that. And you know, I often feel that there's so much amazing work that's being done in creativity. I'm so passionate about marketing and the creative side. And I was going through all of the Cannes Lions 2024, making time to see what's happening in the world of creativity. And you know, there's such incredible work being done there. And you sometimes take for granted in this world of AI, it's AI and creativity, absolutely. Right?
Yeah.
And I love how the "and" is so important this year at the theme of Cannes Lions, because ultimately, if we don't flex our creative muscles, you know, you can have all the information in the world, all the velocity and speed, but creativity helps you to find the direction, right?
Yeah, like for me, AI has been such a game changer for us, right? It's not something, you know, a lot of marketers, I guess, and like agencies and stuff, when AI, as it's been exploding, have been nervous about the impact it's going to have on their jobs, on the agencies and companies and all of that. For me, like, I've looked at it as, to your point, and I mean, I'll give you like a simple example, because at the end of the day, right, you still need a human being to be able to judge that this work that has come out of like this AI tool speaks to my brand, speaks to the messaging that I wanted to speak to. And we've done some fantastic work using AI this year that's won us numerous awards, actually.
Wow.
But at the end of the day, my team has had to be the people who say, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense, this like fits into our brand. And by the way, we've played with so many different tools. Some tools have been great, you know, and then some tools haven't been great.
100.
Like, you know what I mean? And that's part of our learning process and stuff. And I think, you know, let's think of the metaverse, right? For me, what's important as a marketer is don't be scared of all the technologies and the tools that come out of there. Rather learn to play with them. Like when the metaverse came out, for example, you know, my GT colleague on Group Exco at NetBank and I went there and we said, look, we don't know what this thing is, but can you give us some money to play in it? And we did two plays in it. We did the decentralized metaverse and centralized. And we learned that actually for us, the work that we're doing with Chowtown on Roblox was stronger than buying like land in Ubuntu land. Like it's, you know, fine for other brands, but not for us. And then now that's what we focused on. But imagine if we just sat down and said, we don't know what this thing is, so we're not going to try it. We're scared of it and all of that. And I think as marketers and creative people, the way we need to look at these things is it's just tools.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you need a smart, creative human being who's going to use the tool in the best way for their brand and their business.
100%. And conscious leaders, right?
Absolutely.
So we've built this model around. So I'm very passionate about technology. I actually brought the Connected Marketer to South Africa. And I've always been, you know, either you're going to embrace change or you'll be enslaved by it.
Absolutely.
That's your two options.
Yeah.
And there is a time like when I was like, oh, I'm feeling this is feeling so wrong. But you know what? You need to look at the polar opposites of everything. And one thing that I've realized that has really been something I'm so passionate about, in fact, Conscious Leaders has been built around that, is as the world is embracing the age of artificial intelligence, we must recognize that the universe works in opposites, right? Polar opposites. What is the opposite of that is authentic intelligence. And there's seven key intelligences that we need to work on in order for us to build our authentic intelligence. And that is creative intelligence. That is collective intelligence. It is culture intelligence. It's spiritual intelligence. It is also learning intelligence. Very, very important. Then we've also got emotional intelligence, which we can't live. We have to really understand the emotional halos to embrace emotional sovereignty. And then the other one is foresight intelligence. I think that sometimes when we look at foresight intelligence, we think, what is the next trend? It's not just about what's the next trend. It's having the foresight to know, I am engaging with this brand. What is the impact that this transaction will have on the people that work in that business? Or, you know, starting to think about, you know, the supply chain. How many entrepreneurs am I enabling because I'm buying from this business? And that, I believe, is something that we all as individuals need to start becoming as our own futurist, and having that foresight. But with that in mind, I want to go back a second. So the ad industry in 2023, the ad spend was over $750 billion, yeah. right?
Yeah.
And only 6% of that was effective. And that's actually a good number if you think about that. But AI is reshaping creativity, and average is not good enough anymore. And in Cannes Lions, they had this fascinating A-B test that was done by an agency called System One. Mm. And they had cows grazing and eating grass, and they played that video, and it's surpassed 50 other ads, and it outperformed it. Mm. And it just showed you the lack of creativity and how much work needs to be done, because I think that dull ads versus non-dull ads perform so much better. Creativity has an ROI. What is your view?
My strong belief is that creativity drives business growth.
Yes.
And the minute you believe that as a marketer, you completely change your mindset around the work that you do. When I got my job about 7 years ago, I was very clear that in order for our brand to be differentiated in the market, yes, we need to be more digital in the products we offer, and we need to have great service, all of those things. But to be honest, at some stage, these things become table stakes, right? It's very difficult to have very differentiated products in marketing. So what did we look at? I said, I think creativity is the bit, like in terms of how we tell the stories about the products we have, the stories about the services that we have, that's actually what's going to differentiate us. And the first piece we started with was a piece called Secrets.
Incredible work about the entrepreneur.
Yeah, like basically loses money, So, and the stats were based on real South African stats, which are still true today, which are scary. 2 out of 3 South Africans spend more than what they earn. 70% of small businesses fail in the first 3 years. More than like 1 out of 3 South Africans have lost money from a pyramid scheme, because everyone's like trying to like cope. They want like, how do they get successful and stuff? Mm. But the means that they're doing to do that are not great, right? And so we know those stats. And you know, what we did is we pretended to launch a movie, and no one knew like that it was like Nedbank. We had all these trailers and all of that. We invited journalists, celebrities to like Hyde Park for the launch of this movie. Zero clue, like, that this is going to be a 15-minute movie from a bank and stuff.
I love that.
And we won our first Grand Prix from a Louis perspective.
Wow.
And for me, what it did is it set the bar. Everyone, like, took notice and went, wait, was that Nedbank?
Mm.
So now, actually, it's actually funny because the expectation is even higher. But like, if you look at what it did, it changed brand perceptions of what our brand like was. And we're quite a purpose-led brand. And in order to put those narratives in market, I think was very, very important. If we look at the product solutions we then put on the table, so selling our products with a story that is really powerful, we saw the growth of like the products from that perspective. So when I say creativity drives business growth, like, we know in South Africa, for example, that more than 80% of advertising on TV is actually not noticed.
Yeah.
That is, you are basically misusing your company money, guys.
Yeah.
This is a misuse of company money.
Damaging the industry.
Damaging the industry, yeah. Damaging your brand and stuff. So we do need to be braver. And it really bears dividends. And I've seen it in the work that we've done, whether it has been around selling more products, whether it's been around how people think about our brand, whether it's been around our employees and how they feel about working for the business that they work for. I mean, I can tell you the latest campaign we've done during 16 days of activism. So you know how in...
Oh, yes, I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, in cigarettes and, you know, in alcohol, there's warnings that say, you know, don't drink and drive and all of that. We know that whilst money is important and can change people's lives for the positive, we also know that in 99% of GBV cases, money is used for financial abuse to either keep the woman at home, she doesn't have access to funding, you know, it's all of those things. So we put money warnings on all our advertising as Nedbank to say money can be used to harm women. What was so special,
powerful,
like, besides the market's reaction, was employees at Nedbank's reaction, because they want to work for a brand that is standing for something and that is talking about something that is actually fundamentally important in society that no one talks about. Everyone talks about you know, physical abuse, emotional abuse, but financial abuse is actually how, like, a lot of women end up staying, because they, in many ways, their names are, they're in debt because their names are being used in loans and stuff they have no idea about, or they don't have access to money, they don't have jobs,
that happens a lot.
You know? And besides our employees being, like, really proud that the brand did that, for me, what was special was their stories at work, like, that they sent to me. Like, I get a little bit emotional when I think about it, saying, here's what I'm going through. Like, and when I saw this, it gave me the power to be able to say, actually, no, I can't stand for this. So that's the power of creativity. And that for me, I don't think would have thought of money warnings. Like, it's
It could never. And this is the thing, right? Storytelling is all about vulnerability.
Yeah.
And it's saying, right, we as a brand are going to take a bold move and we're going to make ourselves vulnerable. And you have to have an understanding that you are going to have judgments. Absolutely. And there is going to be people that's not in agreement with it. And that is okay. They're not ready to receive it, but at least they're thinking about you a lot and thinking about what you shared, which makes that impactful.
Absolutely.
For me, one of the best advice I ever got is 99% of people are going to love this keynote. And there's going to be 1% that's going to hate it. But that 1% is the 1% that you're actually aiming for.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the people that really contemplate and it's reflecting on what you said is actually where the impact happens the most.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love what you've just mentioned about GBV. And also, it sparks the conversation also to the inspiration that you previously mentioned, is the conversations around, you know what, I might look like I've got it all figured out and I've got my whole life put together, but I've actually gone through this, or I am going through this. One of the research that we've done within Conscious Leaders has also revealed so much about women empowerment and how much work corporates are doing within women empowerment, and then women go home and then they don't have any power there. And that, to me, that disconnect, it's heartbreaking. And it's finding a way of actually creating these psychological safe spaces to have these conversations. So well done on that.
Yeah,
it's quite an achievement. But, you know, I always have to look at the polar opposites, because we are also seeing a lot of work being done out that is, you know, it's just average. And average is not good enough.
Absolutely.
We got to change the narrative. There's a lot of eyes on Africa at the moment and looking at how we do things differently. And I'm so proud of where we are at the moment. But I also just wanted to have an understanding is, do you feel that we as Corporate South Africa do enough to bring purpose and shared value into the conundrum when we are solving problems and when we're taking things to market? Are we? You know, there's something impactful that I read. We're living in an age where we have all the answers. It's now about, are we asking the right questions?
Yeah.
Do you think that we as marketers are asking enough of the good questions and doing that research to get to the right answers?
So I had the pleasure of being on the United Nations has got the Global Impact Forum, which is really around the landing of the Sustainable Development Goals. So at the moment, we are 25%. We've said by 2030, the United Nations set the target to say by 2030, we will have achieved the SDG goals. Wait, 30%. Like, it's not going to happen, I can tell you.
Yeah.
And I was invited to be one of the 25 CMOs globally to be like, how can marketing play a role in really landing the Sustainable Development Goals? And I think in the conversations that they had, they realized that, wow, there is this bank on the tip of the African continent that is actually thinking about these things quite deeply. And I'll give you a couple of examples. So then they asked me to actually go to the United Nations and represent marketers speaking around you know, the type of things that we're doing. So actually, I think what will surprise people, and maybe it's because the needs in our continent are much higher, I think what would surprise people is we're actually leading edge when it comes to thinking about what's the positive impact for the society that we live in, right? Like, and beyond just climate, because I always make the example to say, guys, I can tell you, Tsepo sitting in Soweto doesn't care about climate change.
Yeah.
He should. It is going to impact him. But actually, what does he care about? He cares about having a job and putting food on the table, right? Mm. So for us, when we talk about climate change and all of that, we have to think about the entire ecosystem and the impact it ends up having on TSEPO, because actually ultimately one of the key challenges in South Africa, one of them is unemployment, poverty, like all of those things and stuff. So for me, I'm lucky that in my role, I don't only look after marketing, I look after transformation, and I also look after CSI. So a few years ago, I said to my team in CSI, we can't continue to do corporate social investment the way we've been doing it, which is handouts. Mm. It doesn't change people's lives. Mm. So we put a strategy that said we wanted to grow jobs, entrepreneurs, as well as skills development in the green economy. And we chose water, waste, energy, and agriculture.
Beautiful.
Now you think about those four areas, the impact that they have, like from a future perspective and all of that, is actually significant. In those years since we've done that, we have created more than 1,000 jobs. We've created about 700 entrepreneurs. We've put kids through skills development where they will be guaranteed a job, because mm-hmm. we know water, energy, agriculture, waste are actually future consumer needs, right? Yeah. And when people start to think about the SDG goals as a need, we need water.
Mm. It's basic,
right? Mm. And then as an organization, how can I solve for ensuring that there's water? Not only do you solve a consumer need, a social need, you make money out of it. And that, for me, is where I think organizations, when they think about the SDG goals, they think about it as CSI. We don't think about it as CSI. We think about it as a way of those entrepreneurs that we've created are going to come into the ecosystem from a GDP perspective for South Africa and make an impact on our country and stuff. So actually what like would really surprise people is, I think as African countries, and obviously I know our South African story much more, we're actually much more leading edge, because our needs, if you think about the SDG goals, zero poverty, like zero hunger, all of those things are not as relevant in Europe or in the US. There's some issues here and there, but they're not as relevant as us. We need to be much more creative as Africans around solving those things. And I think when we do that and we solve them creatively, we will change not only people's lives, but our businesses.
100.
And for me, the day it clicked for me, that Nedbank cannot be a sustainable bank in an unsustainable country.
Mm.
And solving for these things, for the sustainable development goals, actually allows us to continue to have a business, have clients, and have an economy that works. And I really wish a lot more marketers would think about things in that way, because I think we could actually change the world.
Yeah. You know, one prime example is like when you buy a bread or something like that, why are we giving away 1 million rands worth of prizes that's not going to do anything in our lives? Why don't you take that money and take one community and go and put solar panels up for them, or give them a water hole or something like that? There is so much more that we can do, and to think creatively on impact. And I think also what there's two points that I just want to go back to. You touch on something very important. For the person that just has basic needs and needs to survive, they're not going to think about sustainability, right? And I think one of the fundamental problems there is also the language. Mm. Because what I've experienced as an entrepreneur is that sustainable development goals and the whole world of ESG is all discussed at corporate level. Mm. But we are not taking those conversations from boardroom to living room. Mm. We are not having those conversations that we, as the people that don't sit and deal with the United Nations all day long and deal with all of the SDGs and deal with it within boardrooms, can also start thinking on, how can I make an impact in the purchasing decisions that I'm making within my household? Mm. How can I actually make a small difference? And I think it has a lot to do with the language, because for the system to change, the language needs to change, because we use big words like intersectionality and all of that amazing big words. And then somebody goes, I have no idea what you just said. Yeah. It doesn't land with me.
I'll tell you what people will understand. We've got an energy crisis.
Yeah.
So that's why you don't have electricity. Right now, when you look at solar panels, there's lack of number of people who can actually install solar panels. If you get skills development in this area, you will get a job. That's the language.
That's the language.
And then all of a sudden the person goes, oh, I get that. Like,
yeah.
And that's what we did. Like, we
love it.
Don't talk about SDGs and all of that. We and I always have to remind people, guys, there are 17 sustainable development goals. Like women empowerment is one of them, for example.
Yeah.
But we all just tend to focus on like energy, climate change, all of that important. But in a country and in a continent like ours, as businesses, we need to broaden the conversation to something that actually connects deeply to more people. Because if I'm talking to you about even the water crisis right now, right, that we have, if I'm talking to you about helping you build a business that can actually build boreholes, you understand that there's no water. You see it in your own house. Yeah. And then I say to you, we're going to teach you how to build a business. And then we work with a couple of partners. And you now have a business that builds boreholes. The need for boreholes is extremely high currently, right, in South Africa.
I know, especially in Durban.
You know what I mean? So then what happens is you're actually part of the sustainable development conversation without using big words. It's just like there's no water.
And hop onto the crisis. Yeah. Like if the crisis is happening now, that's the relevant
time. That's the relevant, absolutely. So for me, I think that's been our lesson is that, yes, we'll have in the, like, you know, we'll talk to the United Nations in the boardroom. We'll talk about we've got targets around where the areas we want to focus on, blah, 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 like all of those good things. But I always think about the person on the street and the impact that
so important
it will have on them. Even like on the advertising that, you know, we do, like I always think about like how will it impact? I mean, there's a beautiful piece of work we did this year that was honoring the kids of 1976.
We've got to play it for the audience. It's going to play right here, right now.
Bantu education, separate education for blacks, was set in motion by Dr. Fafod.
I saw a boy of about 11 going down on the police van. I could not believe it.
The highest accolade for learners is to have their name displayed on their school honors board. So we partnered with schools across South Africa to induct the class of 76 onto these boards forever.
On 16 June 1976, police responded by suddenly opening fire on gathered school children.
16-year-old Irene Palatse.
His name is Karabo Malo.
Shot dead by soldiers in Yanga, where he lies with a bullet in his head.
If we're going to be a brand that really wants to make an impact on society, telling these type of stories, I think is fundamentally important.
How we got to that work, right, is we've got a platform called YouthX. And YouthX is about empowering young people, allowing them to network with each other, but then also funding businesses that they come up with. What has been interesting for me, a lot of people don't think young people understand sustainability. The ideas that we've seen, so for example, young man Jacques, last year he won our YouthX Awards. His idea was around thrifting. So he built an app where people could actually sell their, like, you know, clothes they don't want and,
know,
and then buy clothes that other people. And this app is thriving. So we funded this app, right? Now, this is sustainability in a young person's mind, right? And by the way, this is SDG 12, which is responsible consumption and responsible
consumerism.
Production. And yeah, right? And This is a young man who's built an app that is thriving in that. And for me, again, it's not like we're talking to him about responsible production and consumption, blah, blah, blah. But what he knows is in his community, they like, and his friends, they like thrifting and all of that. Let's make it easier through an app and stuff. So all of a sudden, that conversation lands in such a powerful way. So we've got YouthX. We love YouthX.
Oh, I love that.
The ideas that come out of it are generally what has been interesting for me in a sustainable like landscape, and people don't think young people care about that. And digital, like they've like a lot of the ideas have been digital. But what we also wanted to do is we said, you know, sometimes like a lot of young people in South Africa feel hopeless. And actually, if you think about what the kids in 1976 did, wow, like against a police state, if they could do that, what stops me now from actually doing something? We did this honors board where we researched, did a lot of work around some of the kids who were killed in 1976. And we went to schools in South Africa, and a lot of schools partnered with us, where we put their names on the youth honor, on the honors board. So you'll see 2023, and then it'll say 1976 and the kid's name. And then we spoke to the school about that child, for, and then the would ask the family to come through. And to sit with Noble's dad, and his son died when he was 10, and Noble's dad says, thank you. No one's ever recognized that my son was killed.
And I can see you getting very emotional.
Yeah, like it was like just to talk to those parents. And I think that's what brand and creativity should do, right? Is we should go, we're not the South Africa that we are now without 1976, and we can't cancel those things. They happened. They built the South Africa that we have now. But what we can do is we can use that to inspire the youth of today to say, guys, it's never always been easy. Look at what they did. And if they could do that, you can as well. But how can we then partner with you and help you? And that's where YouthX comes in for us, where we fund these businesses, we fund bursaries, we fund to ensure that the conversation amongst young people isn't only about partying. It ends up in a party, by the way, like when you announce the awards and stuff. But young people want to have much deeper conversations than we believe and think, the way we treat them, in the way we market to them. They actually want to have much deeper conversations. And I've loved seeing, like this year we had 800 entries of businesses from young people saying to us, We are inspired. We just need someone to believe in us.
Yes.
And yeah, it inspires me actually.
I absolutely love that. So with Conscious Leaders, we have a youth collaborative, 10 incredible women. They're between the ages of 25 and 35. And listen, their view on sustainability. I mean, I sometimes just sit back and I go, whoa, listen, preach. They actually started their own webinar series where they unmask things that are important for them through their perspectives. And it's so true what you're saying is like they are very hopeful. But as I always say, we need to stop talking about the youth as being the leaders of tomorrow. They are leading now because they're inspiring somebody else. And we can learn a lot from them.
Absolutely.
So I'm so in with that. I absolutely love that. Listen, you and I, if we have to talk about marketing and creativity, we'll sit here for 10 days. I want to talk to you about, you know, women in leadership, something I also know that you're very passionate about. I came across a post where you were talking about the challenges of being a woman of color in leadership and also talking about the challenges that women face. We've come across that quite a lot within Conscious Leaders and the conversations that we are having. What do you think needs to change in order for us to be more supportive for women of color? And the challenges that they face. Can you maybe elaborate for us?
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'll take a little bit of a step back because I think there is, it's a two-way relationship in terms of like I as a black woman and what I stand up for and what is important to me and what I fight for, right? So in 2010, I was working at Unilever at that time. And I had a boss, and I give him grace now because
I love it.
I give him grace now because I recognize that actually he was in his own struggle, like, of ambition. And in that struggle of ambition, he left dead bodies behind him. And I was one of them. And I remember saying to my brother at that time that I really hate my job. And I loved working for Unilever, but that particular point in time was just not great. And my brother, who was 19 years old, said, resign. I was like, you know, these 19-year-olds.
That got all the true answers, right?
It's just like, you know. And unfortunately, not even 3 weeks after the conversation, my brother passed on. And it hit me really hard, right, to say, oh my God, like, you can go through such a tough work thing and you're not okay and all of that, and then you die. Like, that's not the life I want for myself. So I took a break from working for like 6 months, and I made a contract with myself during that time. The first part of the contract was to clarify if I loved marketing, and I decided, wow, like, I do, I love marketing. The second contract that I made with myself was I would only work with organizations or for organizations that appreciated me, like being authentically me. There's a lot about me. If you look at the exco of the bank, I'm like, I do not look like the typical exco. And, you know, I'm trying not to swear on this podcast because I swear a lot.
Love it.
I wear sneakers to board meetings, you know, and I work in an organization that has completely embraced it and just absolutely loved it. So I made the contract with myself that if an organization does not allow me to be authentically me, I'm out. And I can feel it when it's happening. I made a contract with myself that I wanted to work with organizations that that wanted to look like the South Africa that I live in, both from a leadership perspective. So not just the people below, but exco boards and all of that, that I want to work for organizations that really want to represent the country that I live in. And the last contract that I made was, it's this whole idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? Like, I think you've probably heard it, like where they say, you know, diversity is like something like being invited to the party. Equity is like, you know, choosing the song or something. I can't remember what it is. But for me, I wanted to work in an organization where actually I should feel like I belong. Like, I shouldn't feel like I'm other, you know. And in many ways, I'm lucky that I do work in an organization like that, but it's not perfect. There has been instances where I felt as a black woman that how am I looking at a list of the top, like, you know, 30 paid people in the organization, and they're all white men. And if they, or maybe two white women and three Indian guys. Like, for me, that hurts me.
Yeah.
Because that says to me that something's wrong. And you can tell, we can have an argument to say they're not in the right jobs to get paid in that, at that level. Well, then put them in the right jobs because they are out there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So you're just not making a conscious effort to find people and make sure that you put them in the right jobs. I cannot look at another list of top paid people and there's no black women in it. Like, that doesn't work for me. And this is a fight that is, like, really deep within me. I cannot continue to sit in meetings where, and that particular post when I wrote it, I was in a meeting where I was completely gaslighted.
Sure.
Completely gaslighted. And I think what really hurt me was I had two other colleagues. So the person who gaslighted me doesn't work for the bank. But I had two colleagues who didn't stand up for me. And when I stand up for myself, I'm an angry black woman. I'm aggressive. I'm this. And I remember having a conversation with someone else after that, and they said, you generally don't allow people to talk like that to you. What happened? And I said, I expected my colleagues to support me, and they didn't. And by the way, what it did, it opened a really open and honest conversation at Exco about what does allyship really look like. Guys, we talk about allyship, but when it counted, I didn't have that allyship.
Sure.
But we've now had a beautiful conversation around what it is and the expectation that I have from my colleagues around when something like that happens to me and stuff. And that's the bit around, like, doing better. I don't want my niece Zoe.
I just want to see if we've
got...
Behind me, we've gotten used to having tissues around when we have the show. Oh, there you go. sorry, we just have to have a tissue break. But I mean, like, while you fixing that, you know, what a beautiful way of putting it, addressing it in the moment. This is not allyship. This is not what it looks like. Ugh. And using, it's like what we talked about in sustainability, right? Use the crisis, use that moment and address it there.
Exactly.
I mean, that is profound.
Yeah. Because for me, had they addressed it in that meeting, I would have felt this is allyship. The person doing it would have been called out and learned something. And hopefully they would have reflected on it later to say, I actually got called out on this thing. And, there must be something I did. And hopefully they reflect and stuff. Mm. But it's fine. It didn't happen at that moment. But like I said, it built a beautiful conversation for us as an executive team around, guys, actually, as a black woman, what does allyship look like for me? It doesn't look like afterwards you say to me, well, that wasn't right. No, you've got to do it in the moment to show that isn't right.
Yeah.
So for me, the belonging bit is like really important. And then if I look at leadership, if it is, it cannot be that in 2024, we still have organizations with leadership that doesn't reflect the country that we live in.
Mm.
The pressure, by the way, and I take the pressure that it puts on me as a black woman around mentoring, showing up in a particular way, showing women of color that you can be yourself. You don't have to assimilate. You don't have to. It was interesting, actually. I'll tell you the story. I did my AMP at Harvard.
Oh, wow. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, I think I should take a bow.
And one of the professors, a great professor, was talking to us about leadership. And then she says, you know, when you're a leader, and she does this walk. And to me, it looked like a white man walk, right? Like, this is how you should be. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. And I said, this is the problem.
Mm.
What you guys identify as good leaders is based on a narrative of a white man, right? And that's fine. For if that's how a white man wants to carry himself, and if that's how a black woman, another black woman wants to carry herself, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's not a problem. Yeah. But please, can we expand the idea of what leaders look like, how Jeez. Leaders sound, how leaders show up? Because I don't show up like that. And if I listen to you, I'd have to change and not be authentically myself and stuff, right?
Like, listen, I am a bonkers, right? And I almost feel like there's certain rooms that I in that I feel like when I talk about authenticity, I have to blend. And I'm like, I'm not going to do it, even if you don't like me after this. I just can't.
I just can't. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And
sorry, but that's like, it speaks to me. Preach.
And actually, do you know what happens when, like, I always think when you're authentically yourself, especially as a woman, you are much more effective.
Mm.
You do your best work. Whenever I've tried to assimilate, I actually don't do great work because I'm trying so hard to be something I'm not. The minute you allow me to be Kenzie, let me tell you, we are winning here. Like, we are doing great work. And like, part of it is also this diversity thing, like these voices that come into the room. Like, I'll tell, like, and I get it sometimes that it's not top of mind. Like, for some people, I'm the type of person who trusts first, right? Like, you lose trust from me, right? Like, so I'm not, you don't have to build trust. I trust you immediately. You lose trust because of like how you show up.
Yeah. When the mask starts coming off
and stuff.
Oh my gosh, I think you and I have a lot in common. Love hard, love bombing. Oh,
exactly, like I'm in, right, you know? And I always like love the fact that because I'm in the room, I put such difficult conversations in the room. And that's why like diversity is important. Yeah, it helps us get, you know, better results. And diversity, by the way, as we know, is not just color, it's not just gender. It's like a really you know, but the conversations that I end up putting in the room sometimes can be really uncomfortable. But I know that it is important conversations, both for our organization, for the people, but also for our country.
Yeah.
Because then the things that we end up doing as a bank end up actually showcasing like what an organization that is purpose-led, believes in South Africa, and believes in building a South Africa that is much more for everyone, like versus for the few and stuff, you know, end up doing, and, you know, and all of that. And it's not easy. But what I would love to see is, I don't want, why must it be the person of color always putting those conversations in the room? I want to see more people who, quite frankly, have been more privileged. That, I mean, like, I understand the privileged conversation and all of that, but we know that, like, you know, have probably been to better schools and all of that. Not that they haven't worked hard. They've worked hard. Like, a lot of people I know have worked really hard. And a lot of white men that I have fantastic relationships with, that I work really well with, haven't come from great backgrounds, right? Like, they've worked really hard. But actually, their starting point is higher than, like, a person of color. It's the truth. And, you know, whichever way we look at it and stuff. But I want to see more of them putting these tough conversations in the room. And that's why I say corporate South Africa must do better. Don't leave it to us to fight for ourselves.
Like, no.
Like, you've got to be part of it to ensure that we actually see a real change.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, for me, like, what's important.
I so love that you're discussing this. We actually had a interview with the Colorful podcast. They take on race and privilege, and we really had we used the room as a room of psychological safety to show what a real conversation is going to look like about this and stepping into that zone. And it's so empowering because you go in there scared, right? Mm-hmm. You feel like, oh my gosh, I've got so much shame and I've got like, I can't do this. But when you walk into a room being vulnerable and knowing that there's trust in the room and there's safety in the room, those experiences and those conversations actually makes the human experience worthwhile.
Yeah.
And there's so much compassion and you know, you arrive somewhere and you go, wow, you know, I always believe if you're thinking about something all the time after a conversation, that conversation has done its job.
Yeah.
And that's where you start becoming more aware. And I think that's what consciousness is all about. It's taking what's unconscious and bringing it to the consciousness all the time.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest journey is the journey from the head to the heart.
Agree.
Authenticity can't be accessed if you don't play in your heart.
Yeah.
And it's really a space where I'm really, really trying so hard. Look, I don't always get it right. And sometimes I feel, oh my gosh, I have really messed up. Or maybe I said something that was hurtful because I'm very sensitive. And maybe I shouldn't have said it that way. But the thing is like, I'm making myself vulnerable. So if I'm wrong, please help me. Yeah. And I want you to tell me I don't agree with you, because then I can understand, okay, where have I gone wrong?
Absolutely.
Where's my biases? And that's where I'm reflecting. And I think this is what you're saying, right? Yeah. Is we need to be able to have the conversation, even if we're not right.
Even if we're not right.
And yeah.
And we learn from that conversation. And by the way, like, I can tell you, the person who had the biggest impact in my career is a white man from the Netherlands. And when he made me a category director at the age of 25, he said, I believe in her. He put a circle around me that made me successful.
I love
coaching,
that.
Mentoring, you know, all of that to ensure that I was successful. And so that's what I mean by allyship. Like, he saw a young black girl and he saw the talent and he said, I'm going to fetch her from Cape Town and get her back.
Love that.
And here's what we're going to do for her. And honestly speaking, that's the man who actually changed the trajectory of my career. If I think about Nedbank, when I got promoted onto Group Exco, again, it was a white man, Mike Brown, who looked at this 39-year-old who, at the time when he called me, it was such a funny story because so I'd been at Nedbank in September 2017, and in Jan he calls me, or his PA calls me and says, Mike wants to see you. I'm literally wearing shorts and a Liverpool top.
Oh, we can't talk. Oh, no. My husband is not going to be happy. He supports Leeds United.
Oh, wow.
Let's not go there.
So I walk into Mike's office and Mfundo, our CEO, is also there. And they say, look, I mean, we've experienced you now for 3 months and this job has been available and, you know, et cetera. And we'd actually like to promote you. I do think at that moment when I walked in, you can imagine these two bankers. And here I am walking in with my sneakers, shorts, and a football jersey. I think they had a particular moment where they thought, oh,
sure about this stuff, you know.
But, you know.
Oh, this is amazing. I love it.
He chatted to Mike afterwards. Oh. He's like one of the best hiring decisions he ever made and stuff. So I'm not saying that there are so many people out there who really have shown allyship and stuff. But we just need to see more of it. And yeah. It needs to be something that doesn't surprise people. It must be the norm. We mustn't be surprised that, gee, she's only been at Nedbank for like 4 months and she's getting promoted. Like, whoa. You know, it should be the norm, whether it's for whoever it is for and stuff. And that's like, for me, I think what's really important. And then I think like there's a lot of pressure on us, right? Because like I say, so at Nedbank, I am, you know, I'm the only African woman on Exco, so you can imagine everyone. Please mentor me. Please do this. Please do that. Externally in marketing, and I get it, right? Because people are looking for, they want to succeed. They're looking for people to have role model to do this, and so I realized at some stage that I was losing energy, where I was mentoring so many people, And I love mentoring, by the way, because I walk away learning. I walk away inspired myself by other people's stories, but it was draining me. Mm. And that's why I created the Own Your Path platform. It's basically Tinder for mentoring.
I love that. So your marketing brain is already exactly. Behind that one. Tinder for... yeah.
So you come in as a mentor and say, here's how, you know, here's the areas I'd like to mentor in. Here's how much time I have, blah, blah, blah. You come in as a mentee, you see the mentors that are available and you choose. And I launched it about a month ago. How many people have signed on as mentors because they want to help, they want to do something. And then it's actually put the pressure off me now where I say to someone, I really can't do it, but if you go onto the platform, you will find someone who's going to mentor you and stuff. And we've been following the stats. We actually, the person who built the platform for us, or the company that built the platform for us, can't believe how well this platform has done with organically. I mean, I don't have money to. I don't have money for paid media.
We established 6% of it will be affected, right?
So organically, it's done incredibly well and stuff, yeah. You know? So for me, it was about thinking about the responsibility I have, but instead of the pressure that it was putting me under and thinking about how can I creatively solve for that pressure while still knowing that I have a responsibility, and I do, and I don't shy away from it. I really do. When was it? I think about 3 weeks ago, I met Liana. So when my brother passed on, he was studying animation at Open Window. We're generally creatives in my family. I don't know how, because
first of all, my condolences.
Yeah, no, thank you. So my dad was a soldier and my dad is a teacher, but there's a marketer, there's a filmmaker.
Jeez,
it happened. So in his name, we created the Alex Foundation, which basically funds kids from disadvantaged backgrounds in the creative fields. And this year at the Lurie's, the Young Creative of the Year, Joey Gordon, was actually funded by the Alex Foundation.
Oh, wow.
And then we met Leah, who was doing her final year at Vega. So my husband, she asked us to come see her final work and stuff. And I was really emotional. And I called my mom and I said, your son did not die in vain. This is the output of
getting goosebumps.
What, you know. And that's part of my responsibility again, right, and stuff. And I think as successful people, we need to recognize the country that we live in and ensure that we don't build walls, but rather we open up opportunities for other people to ensure that our country continues to be successful and stuff, but not at the expense of our health and that's the energy bit and all of that is really, really important.
So I can learn so many lessons from you, because I actually got to myself to a point. I mean, you follow the journey with Conscious Leaders, we really started in January this year and it just exploded. And I just kept on giving. I think I mentored over 200 women by myself. And I just at the end of this, and then started the Youth Collaborative and all of that. And I love everything about it. But at some point, you've got to fill your own cup.
You've got to keep on
giving, you know?
When I told my team in March this year that, and again, vulnerability, and I think this is the superpower of women, authenticity, vulnerability, all of that, I think is a superpower. The things that people maybe look at and go, leaders shouldn't be vulnerable. Leaders should be vulnerable. When I told my team in March that my tank was empty, I was going on a retreat to Mexico for 10
days. Oh, nice.
And like I said, and I said to them, take care of yourself first before you can, you know, do anything to help any, you know, others. And the number of people in my team, firstly, who came to say, thank you for being open, like open about how you were feeling. And I said, I'm not okay. Like, and I need to take care of myself. So I went on a retreat where, we were in the jungle, connecting with nature, doing yoga, meditating, like really just clarifying some things for myself. And that's what, like, part of how Own Your Path came about, like when I was there, to say, I still want to be able to provide mentorship, but I can't do it personally. Like again, making contracts with myself around, like you know, what should be, you know, and then came back with a lot of good energy, actually. And so I even say to my team that, guys, I not like you cannot drain yourself for an organization, no matter how much the organization, and I love the organization that I work in. I think it's a great organization. But let me tell you something. If I die now, they will replace me. So I have to put myself first.
Yeah.
At any given time. And that was like going in March and saying, you know, to my bosses, like, I'm out and I'll see you when I get back, and I'll be fine when I get back. And I was, you know what I mean? Like, so we need more of these conversations around being vulnerable, allowing people to say, I'm not okay. And saying to them, that's cool. Go take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And again, that's the bit around like female leaders, where I think it is a superpower for us, because we can be more vulnerable. We can allow people to be more vulnerable towards us. And I, you know, I hope men learn that leadership quality actually from female leaders.
I love that you're saying that, because, you know, one of the things that I also feel very strongly about is, you know, the platform that we've created here. I want men to come and listen to us, how we have our conversations, how we tap into each other's wisdom, how, you know, we always judge because we talk so much, right? But we listen. We bring the whole universe into the conversation. It's like when you put money in our hands, we don't just take care of our family. Yeah, we take care of our community. We take care of those around us. Like, it's everything is a ripple effect in how we think and make considerations and do our decisions. And the same with our conversations. It's like we want to be part. We want to bring everybody into the conversation. And this is why I love that, because there's so much to learn from us. Okay, listen, a woman speaks average of how much? 7,000 to 14,000 words a day. A man is like 3,000. I mean, hello. Does that not already say to you where we sit at this particular point in time? Listen, you and I are dangerous together. Very dangerous. I think it's time. Time to say goodbye now. Parting thoughts from you.
Yeah, look, I mean, actually, I'll end probably with the purpose bit. Like, I would say to be a conscious leader, I do think you need to be like a lot more clear on what your purpose is. And that's not always, it's not a light bulb moment. There's recalibration, there's all of that. But when you figure that out, there's a lot of things, you know, what to say no to, what to say yes to, what to, your path is, it's never 100% clear, but it's clearer. And I think that's really, really important. And for me, I think that was when a lot of my heart and my mind started connecting, was when I discovered that this is actually what I want to do. So everything that I do, whether it's through my company or my personal stuff, is driven by that. And I think my wish for any person who wants to be a conscious leader is that they're able to discover that for themselves. And in discovering that for themselves is understanding that, to then live that purpose, how do you ensure that you don't drain yourself and that your tank is full? Because you can't do that if you don't do this.
I absolutely love that. Can't drive long distance journey on an empty tank.
Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I really, really enjoyed our conversation. I love that we could be typical women and go everywhere. Listen, I hope you kept up with us. From my side, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. And always remember, it's not about how great I can lead, but it's about how I can bring out the greatness in others. Let's just let that simmer in and, you know, think about ways of how we can always bring the audacity back into who we are as human beings and bring it back to ourselves so that we can lead more audacious lives. From my side, thank you so much and hope to see you soon. And if you want to reach out to Kenzie, follow the link below. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.